Today on Movie Wallahs, this is the end. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you.
It's not the end. There's going to be more podcasts, hopefully.
Yeah, this movie does have that kind of final title, and that's really what it's all about, right?
Yes.
Yasdi, you weren't able to see this one.
I really wanted to see it, and I'll probably watch it the day it opens.
I don't know. I said to you before, wait for our reviews. And you know how much of a Seth Rogen fan I am, so.
Uh-oh. That doesn't bode well, but do you want me to do the intro?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is the first directorial outing from funny man Seth Rogen, who, along with co-director Evan Goldberg, also shares writing responsibilities with Jason Stone, whose short film, Jay and Seth Versus the Apocalypse, forms the basis for this movie. This is the end. The film is essentially based on the premise of what happens when a group of individuals attending a party find out that the apocalypse is imminent. This is literally the end of the world. And how do you deal with this news? Only this is no ordinary group of partygoers. It is a party at the home of James Franco. And the attendees include Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, Jay Baruchel, Michael Cera, Emma Watson, Mindy Kaling, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Paul Rudd, Channing Tatum, Rihanna, Craig Robinson, and Danny McBride, all of whom play exaggerated versions of their real-life personas. That, in a nutshell, is this is the end. Rashmi, what did you think about it?
Okay, so the film opens and it feels like the first scene of this film starts where the guilt trip ended, i.e. at the airport. It literally felt like Barbara Streisand had walked off in one direction and then we see Seth Rogen. And it takes just 3 minutes to see our first joint. Typical of a Seth Rogen movie. But I'm happy to say, other than this minor quibble, I loved this movie.
I knew it.
I haven't laughed this hard in a film for ages. This is how you do buddy movies.
You saw it as a buddy movie?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
There's too many buddies, no?
A lot of buddies.
So, you know, low expectations were kind of the name of the game for me here. I walked in with extremely low expectations. I haven't seen, you know, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Seth Rogen. I do like some of his movies, but I haven't seen a good one in a while, it feels like. That being the case, you probably shouldn't listen to this review because the movie was terrific fun. I had a lot of fun with this movie. I think what amazed me more than anything was how they make this goofball comedy stuff look so effortless. It doesn't look like any of them are trying at any point in the movie. And there's a real knack to that in that, you know, they look like they're larking around a set, but there's some really clever stuff in here. Clever's not the right word here, but the movie is extremely well constructed. But it feels lazy because, you know, they didn't even come up with names for the characters. They were like, hey, Seth, you know, hey, James. And it was like, really? You're not going to come up with fake names for these characters? But they were not necessarily themselves. When you say exaggerated versions of themselves, I mean, these are the characters that they always play.
Oh, so they're not. So James Franco is not playing James Franco in real life.
He is, but it's the James Franco that is the character that you always see James Franco play.
I mean, I love that they're really, really, really laughing at themselves. Mm. You know, this is a really nice.
Nice? What's nice about this film?
There's some humility in taking the things that people say about you and laughing about yourself. So there's a lot of references to, you know, Seth Rogen, you're such a bad actor. And he laughs, you know, they laugh at themselves about it. But this is the thing. This film is so ridiculously stupid, but it's balls to the wall ridiculous. I mean, they really go for it. And as a result, it's funny. It's not trying to be anything. It's not trying to be War and Peace, Yasdi, as you always say, or right. Gone with the Wind. They're just being outright ridiculous and stupid, and it works. And it's so cringeworthy and so crazily insane and mad. It's just hilarious. It really worked. I never thought I would say that.
Yeah, it reminded me, And it's nothing like it, but it reminded me of when I watched the first Hangover, of how a movie can constantly push your gross meter, but also tickle you at the same time. And sometimes when they do big gross ads, we saw that movie earlier this year about the college kids, the party. It'll come to me in a second. Where there were these horrible gross outs, but they were just gross outs. Here you have gross outs, but they're genuinely funny. And, you know, we're talking, you know, urination jokes. Every kind of bodily effluent is basically tackled in this movie, which is normally like, ugh, that's so juvenile in its humor. But here, the execution of it made me really laugh hard. And, you know, yes, it's tickling that same juvenile, stupid nonsense type joke, but 21 and Up was the movie that we saw earlier this year, that kind of, but it was very clever. And I think the other thing that the movie had that was unexpected for me was I could never guess where it was going.
Right.
Like there were some moments of real danger for the characters where it was scary. It was actually horror film scary in parts.
There were some real gotcha moments.
Really?
Like, yeah. Sense
of dread, like, you know, this is all about the apocalypse,
right?
But you know, there are, you know, demons, and you know,
there are demons.
It's like, yeah, there's some religious type themes, you know, occult type themes. It's like, really, where is this movie
going? It's actually a smart movie.
Is it a smart movie, or is it something that they came up with while smoking a few joints, which can also be smart?
I think it's
definitely, it improvised.
It's built on a short film that they made not so long ago. And I think the idea was kind of, you know, hey, what would happen if we did a movie about the end of the world? So, you know, the world is literally ending around them, and it's not necessarily clever. It's just, it's their take. I think it is. I would probably think they came up with this on a drunken night. But then they build it so well. They craft it so well. They set themselves up in the situation, and it's like, you know, what would a bunch of douchebags do if they were locked in a house with limited supplies do if it was the end of the world?
Yeah, and these that's are really what I like.
Self-serving characters,
yeah,
who are all kind of pricks in their own way. And like one scene is essentially about the quest to get some water. What would these guys do? What kind of selfish behavior?
How would you choose who's going to go out in, you know, hell's fury?
What kind of self-preservation things would you do? And what kind of rules would you all break if you agree upon rules? It's like all this kind of stuff thrown
in. Good moral stuff.
It's a bunch of douchebags trying to survive the end of the world.
Yeah.
But it's clever in that way.
I want to create a film program which consists entirely of movies which are based about the end of the world. It's become a subgenre now. There's so many movies. I think we're obsessed with it,
yeah.
You know, just in the last year alone, there was Melancholia, there was
Seeking
a Friend for the End of the World, It's a Disaster. This one, there was a movie, a brilliant movie called 314 with William Dafoe, which was about the world collapsing around this couple. It's great. I love that this, you know, this whole new subgenre has come up.
I think it was something to do with the, you know, predicted end of the world of 2012. Remember the whole Mayan calendar? So I wonder if a lot of these films got made around before then to coincide with that.
But as a plot device, you can't beat it, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's great. Exactly.
Think about what you would do. You know, it certainly draws into context the things that are meaningful in life, if life can no longer be for everybody, not just one person in a movie, but everybody. So I think that's why they're so popular.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about this film was everyone was really good. I mean, Jonah Hill was one of Jonah Hill's best movies since Superbad. And you know, people really just went for it. There was, like I said, I felt like this sense of humility, which I haven't really seen in any of those actors a lot, because they are all douchebags. But I think that's what it's making fun of. But Danny McBride was the standout star for me in this one. I love Danny McBride anyway. I literally, at one point, couldn't breathe because I was laughing so much. I was laughing so hard, I couldn't breathe. It was that funny. He's that funny.
I don't usually get his humor, but maybe this will be the one.
Yeah, I mean, I know where you're saying that, Rashmi.
I think I like that sort of humor anyway.
I despised him from start to finish, which was the whole point.
Yeah, but he's a despicable character.
I recognize that, you know, his character and the way that this character was written and the behaviors that this character did were all just like, they were disgusting. It was just like, it's like the ultimate douche.
Yeah. Right. But there's a really funny scene where they make Danny McBride. The point is that Danny McBride is staying with James Franco and he wears James Franco's tux. And it's hilarious because literally Danny McBride is a large guy. Uh-huh. And the thing that made me laugh was he's wearing this tiny little suit. And it's really, really funny. I mean, that's kind of like, it's got some clever humor, but it's also got simple slapstick, but done in a funny way. And it's not like, what's that horrible movie that you love and laugh at that I hate with Johnny Knoxville?
Oh, Jackass.
Oh, it's not Jackass. Right. Okay. So I'm sure half the men listening to this podcast love Jackass.
Is not narrative.
Right, but it's you know how sometimes, you know, like 21 and up has some of that Jackass type humor. I didn't get the Jackassness of the humor here. It was they were funny things that happened. And I think this has one of the best ends of any movie I've watched in recent time. So okay,
good. I'll stay quiet about the end because I didn't quite feel that same way. But yeah. it's best enjoyed by the audience.
Yeah.
And what's Emma Watson doing here? Is it
being
like
Emma Watson?
Is it she's like being a throwaway part? Is it a little part?
No, it's significant.
Okay.
She's not in the We won't say.
Yeah. So
it's not what you expect from Emma Watson.
Good.
It's funny. I mean, everyone's being a funny version. Like, Aziz Ansari's in this, and like I said, Mindy Kaling, and Michael Cera, and you know.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all in it.
And nothing sacred. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's what's really nice here, is that, you know, these characters as themselves do things that, you know, one would not expect of themselves, you know. I mean, they're all essentially behaving like Lindsay Lohan in many ways. So it's kind of bad behavior around from everyone. It's nuts.
It's a good idea. I think it's pretty clever to go meta like that, where you can kind of play the people's expectations of what your character might be based on how you are in movies. That's pretty
clever.
Which
is why I said at the beginning, it could potentially feel a little lazy, right? You know, you are being who you always play, but you're using your own name, and it's like they didn't even bother to invent character names for these guys. But then it's like, oh, that's it's self-satirical, and I think that's
I think it's really smart. Okay, let's
do you guys
wind this one
score
up.
This?
Yes, go Joe.
Well, first of all, I think we need to invent some type of rating that's beyond R. This is like a double R-rated movie. I mean, nothing, absolutely nothing is off limits here. It's so off the walls. And I think, you know, they're pushing it. Everyone's trying to push this harder and harder style comedy, which can sometimes just be offensive for offensiveness sake, but here it worked really well. So more than anything, this was just a funny movie. I thought the jokes worked and the story was very engaging. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. To that point, Joe, about the double R, I wasn't as offended as I think I would have been had Judd Apatow been anywhere near this movie. Thank God Judd Apatow isn't anywhere in the credits. I think that changed the rudeness of it in some ways, and this appealed to me. So I'm just jealous that Seth Rogen gets to hang out with his friends, lark about, and get paid a lot of money for it. Having said that, I'm really glad they did decide to hang around together, because I was very entertained as a result. This is like a level 11 on the insanity scale. I mean, the entire time it's just crazy off the wall, and as a result, it's going to get a really high score from me. I almost gave this a 10.
What?
Because I had such a good time. But I'll back it down to a 9.
Wow.
I haven't laughed this hard. Honestly, at one point I was laughing so hard I couldn't breathe. And I can't recall when I did that in a movie.
But
I don't laugh easily in movies. So this will be a test for me.
Yeah.
But to your last point, Seth Rogen and his buddies weren't hanging around together.
I know.
They were working really hard.
Yeah, agreed.
Not slightly hard, not kind of, you know, in between beers, you know, let's roll cameras. They were working really hard to get these laughs. I felt,
yeah,
as
I
came out, I had so much more respect for all of them as
Me
writers,
too.
As performers, as actors.
James Franco did one of the best performances I've seen him do.
It's really,
in a bizarre way, you know?
It's really hard because they're all essentially being themselves, but they're just eking it up. It's very self-aware and just clever stuff. All right.
Can't wait to see this one.
I'll go see it with you again.
Now we've built it up too much, of course. So I'll go see it while you go see this.
You go see Man of Steel. Yeah. I knew you were going to say that.
You know, we can watch ours twice. By the time Man of Steel is over, this will have played out twice.
Yeah, you can watch it and go for ice cream. Yes. They'll be watching Superman. All right. Mail at movierollers.com for comments. Twitter.com/movierollers as well. We tweet our episodes. They come out. So do tweet us, retweet, and tell all your tweeting friends all about Movie Rollers so that they know when our movies, our episodes come out too. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time, as always. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.
And this is the end of the podcast.